Welcome to the Josie Bass podcast series. We take listeners beyond the printed page, where our authors reveal what motivates and inspires them to write about their groundbreaking ideas.
Hello, this is Amy Packard with Josie Bass, and today I'm talking with John Hope Bryant, author of the recently published Love Leadership, The New Way to Lead in a Fear-Based World. Mr. Bryant is the founder, chairman, and chief executive officer of Operation Hope, America's first financial literacy nonprofit. He also serves as a vice chair of the U.S. President's Advisory Council on Financial Literacy. He's a recognized world authority on financial issues and has been cited by the past four U.S. presidents for his impact on low-wealth communities. His current work includes sharing lessons learned from his new book, Love Leadership. Welcome, John.
Honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, I've got a lot of questions for you, so I'll just dive right in. My first one's a pretty basic one, but what is love leadership?
Well, I think it's the only rational way to live and the only rational way to lead and the only thing that is sustainable over a long period of time and builds wealth and legacy, lets you prosper personally to contribute to society, and frankly, the most important thing, sleep well at night and not have your children think you're a schmuck. I mean, love leadership is selfish to me. I talk about good selfishness and bad selfishness in the book, where good selfishness is where I benefit and everybody else benefits more, and bad selfishness is where I benefit and everybody pays a price for it. Raising your children is good selfishness. Giving to charity is good selfishness. Mentoring young adults and young managers and future leaders is good selfishness. When you give, you get. When you do things that are good for others, you know, you feel good yourself. When you're raising your children, when they're not driving you nuts, mm-hmm. because love is work, mm-hmm. it makes you feel good. I mean, it warms your heart. So basically, you got these two sort of books that have been floating out. You've got books that are sort of, we are the world, we are the future, very soft, very loving, that hard-nosed leaders, people who eat nails for lunch, say, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. And then you've got these hard-nosed books that says win-lose, basically. If I'm going to win, you've got to lose. You know, the Trump version of you're fired, mm-hmm. the punitive approach, where the only boats that are rising are yachts. Well, this global economic crisis has driven it home that that dog don't hunt. That's not a sustainable approach. And people tire of it after a while. And start sabotaging you because you don't believe anything larger than and more important than yourself. And so I just really, as a person, personally, when I wrote this, you know, this is really my own Magna Carta. This is my own, after 30 years, I had tripped upon my own leadership philosophy for life. And then friends and the young global leaders at the World Economic Forum said, John, you've got to share this with others. This book is about housewives and house husbands and small business owners and community leaders and CEOs and major companies and heads of state. It's something that's relevant to everybody, and you have got to share this with others, and that's where the book came from. But it is very personal to me because it is literally how I have lived and continue to live my life, and I wanted to share it with others.
Well, you kind of touched on two of my other questions. One is, who should practice love leadership? And two is, why did you write the book? You kind of touched on both of those, but is there anything more you would like to add on those?
Well, I think that with regard to who should, you know, read the book, I sort of have a problem with books and philosophies that are sort of new agey and sort of relate to only one sector of society. I think the truth is universal. Shouldn't be truth on Monday and not truth on Tuesday, the truth to this class of individuals but not truth to that class of individuals. I think that this book is about the future of leadership itself. On the other side of this economic crisis, we've lost our storyline. You know, like any addiction, when you take it too far, a couple of things happen. You know, one, you're killing yourself, you're dying, you're spiritually you're dying, but also you need more of the same buzz to give you the same buzz. You need more of the same addiction to give you the same high. And we went from the power of the idea, whether it's Google or Twitter or Facebook, you know, these things didn't even exist 10 years ago, you know, all the way back to, you know, Ted Turner and CNN and Steve Jobs with Apple and Bill Gates with Microsoft, all the way back to our social scientists, you know, all the civil rights leaders, Andrew Young, my hero, who's in the book, Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Mother Teresa, et cetera, all the way back to Henry Ford, innovator of the first car. These were people passionate about the power of an idea. You know, Warren Buffett does not wake up in the morning and say, I want to be rich. he wakes up in the morning and says, I got an idea. You know, I love investing. I love adding value, you know. And he lives in the same house that he lived in 20, 30 years ago. Sam Walton drove the same truck until he died. It was never about money and power, although those were nice rewards. And while they appreciated them, that was never what they were about. We have got a group of people today who wake up in the morning and say, I want to get paid. I want to make money. Quincy Jones is in the book, and Quincy says, whenever your agenda is only money, you will only fail. You'll get your 15 minutes, but it won't be sustainable over time because it's not authentic and it's not real. So really, we've dumbed down as a society. Over the last 20 years, Quincy Jones says it takes 20 years to change a culture. In the last 20 years, I believe we've made dumb sexy. We've dumbed down and we've celebrated it. And that has permeated to all walks of life, every socioeconomic culture from the top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And it has affected the way in which we lead. So this book says we need, this is not a recession, it's a reset. This book says that while the symptoms may be economic, that this is really not an economic crisis. You're feeling it economically, but the reality is a crisis of virtues and values. What are we about? Who are we? What do we live for? What's our purpose in life? Is it sustainable? And I then make a very bold case, frankly, that if you want to get rich financially, if you want to do well, if you want to be successful, all these things that are tied to personal aspirations, the best way to do that is to figure out what you have to give. And not the question everybody's asking of what do I get. So it's a book about the future of leadership itself. And it's for everybody because this is a universal theme. It's our first global crisis. And we need a global solution. And I believe it's love leadership.
In the book, you actually talk about the five fundamental laws of love leadership. Can you tell what those are and a little bit about each?
Sure. Law number one, love leadership law number one, is loss creates leaders. I'll go through all five laws quickly, then I'll double back. Loss creates leaders. Number two, fear fails. Number three, love makes money, which I just was talked about just a moment ago. Number four, vulnerability is power. And number five, giving is getting. And then there's a bonus chapter, the conclusion in the book, that's entitled Good Capitalism and Love Leadership. That sort of ties this all together and brings it forward. Probably my favorite chapter is Loss Creates Leaders, which is number one. And, I believe, and I say this repeatedly in the book, you cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. It's a scientific fact that you can't grow without legitimate suffering. And I don't, if you want to give it a war analogy, I don't want to be a foxhole with somebody who's never had a bullet whiz over his or her head. I don't want to go through something with somebody who cuts and runs at the first sign of trouble or battle. You really, if problems either build your character or reveal your character. And more times than not, with every round, you go higher and higher. With every challenge in your life, you become a stronger person and a better leader. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to start a cancer foundation. People who start cancer foundations are people whose lives have been impacted by cancer. Loss creates leaders. And I tell my own story. I was homeless for 6 months of my life. I grew up in Compton, California, in South Central LA. I didn't have any of the purported advantages in life other than a mother who loved me and a dad who told me I could do anything I wanted to do in my life and was a great role model. Oddity of all oddity, that's really what you needed. Those are the most important things, those elements of somebody who tells you that they love you and somebody who says that they believe in you, you can do anything, and then a role model for which you can emulate your life by. And so my life has been a journey of ups and downs, and for every two ups has been 100 downs. So life's about managing pain. How do you manage pain? Life is 10% what life does to you and 90% how you choose to respond to it. Success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And an entrepreneur works 18 hours a day to keep from getting a job. So you really need to reframe your life, reframe your values, reframe what you're about. Stop expecting to wake up in the morning everything to be great. It's not going to be great. You got to make it great. And so loss literally creates leaders. I can't underscore this more. At this point, it's like the whole ball game. There's a book called The Road Less Traveled. It's been on the bestseller list for 20 years. Scott Peck, he's since passed. But the first line, first sentence states, life is difficult. Translation. If you can't get with that statement, don't read the rest of the book. Nobody promised you a rose garden. Nobody said life was going to be free of grief or pain. And so I give a lot of examples of how our most incredible leaders have gone through and survived enormous pains. And it can be extraordinary things like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. giving his life. It could be, you know, very common things, just like you had a childhood that just wasn't all that great. But how did you respond to that? You know, if you were abused as a child, did you grow up becoming an abuser? Or did you grow up and did you found an organization that protects children who are abused? Did you go volunteer some time to young girls to show them that they can be whatever that they want to be, and as you gave, you got, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As you can tell, I can go on for quite some time. Talk to me is like getting a glass of water out of a fire hydrant. that's probably what happens, by the way, when you become a love leader. You know, you don't have a job. Because you're doing what you love, it doesn't feel like a job, and you can do it 18 hours a day versus being exhausted from 8 hours a day at work because you're miserable. You know, you're in late, you're long lunch, and you leave early. This book helps you reset at a time where the world is resetting. And that's why the next chapter is Fear Fails. And I won't bore your listeners with the details there, because this is something that everybody's going to relate to. Fear is a prosperity killer. And I don't have to explain fear to them, because if everybody who's listening to this podcast is feeling fear right now with what's going on in the world. But all I can tell you is, and I go into some detail in the book breaking it down, fear is a punk. Fear is a lazy bastard. Fear fails. It's on the trash bin of history. It'll have its 15 minutes, but it will not sustain over time. And then I talk about how love makes money. And again, people can get the book and drill down into the details of it, but this is not some kind of a sappy, soft concept. I explain in very specific details how love makes money, if that's your goal. One example, very simple example, is that in this mortgage subprime crisis, we treated clients like transactions and not like relationships. And if we had given a loan, if mortgage companies and banks had given a loan to everybody like it was their grandmother, you wouldn't have a crisis. It's simplistic, but everybody who's listening to this podcast right now is saying, yep, that makes sense. And you've given your grandmother a reasonable interest rate, your cost of funds plus a couple percentage or whatever for administrative and a reasonable profit. Over 30 years, you'd feel good about a good loan you gave to your grandmother. She'd pay the loan off. You'd get a reasonable profit. You wouldn't have any losses in your books. And you can go off and be sucking on a margarita at the beach and clipping investment coupons, and not what everybody's doing now, which is trying to dig themselves out of all this financial drama that's really brought on by greed. This is not an economic crisis. This is not about the failure of free enterprise and capitalism. This is about the abuse of free enterprise and capitalism, and about laziness, fear, short-termism, and greed, all of which are related. So I want to make it very clear. I'm all for free enterprise and capitalism. It's just been abused.
Would this relate to your Chapter 3, Love Makes Money?
Well, that is Chapter 3. That is Love Makes, Love Makes Money. I mean, Chapter 4 is Vulnerability is Power, and I just think that without getting too sort of warm and fuzzy with your listeners, and I'm a spiritual person. I don't obsess about religion, but I'm a spiritual person. And Deepak Chopra said, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think people meet you where you are. You know, what do we obsess about? Money, power, prestige, business cards, clothes. You know, what do you do for a living? How much money do you have in the bank? What hotel are you staying in? What kind of car are you driving? But what do we value? Love, charity, compassion, joy, tolerance, empathy, sincerity, trust. Your listeners now are continuing the list on their own, right? Family, kids. Well, you can't touch any of those things. I mean, touch your kids. At that time, you want to choke them if you love them, because they drive you crazy, but because love is work. But the point is that the things you value the most, you can't put your hands around them. They're intangible. They're ideas. Right. So why are we miserable? We're looking for love in all the wrong places. On the things of life. And so we have one foot in yesterday and one foot in tomorrow, and we're not present. So what I'm saying is that that's a false choice. Vulnerability is your power. The more you open up to others, the more they open up to you. People will meet you exactly where you are. And if you're in a crappy relationship, it's not so much an indication of the other person. It's probably an indication of where you are, because you tend to attract that which you are. So that is a very powerful chapter, And we've got to stop this macho crap that supposedly strength is this, I don't feel, I don't care, I'm not going to tell you, you know, what I feel about you, I'm not going to show compassion. That's a bunch of malarkey. The people we admire the most are those who expose themselves spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, and put themselves the most at risk for others when they don't have to do it. Which leads to the last chapter, which is giving is getting. And again, I don't want to talk people into coma about going to all these details, but they can go into, again, drill down into the book. But what I guess what I'm trying to say is it's a roadmap. We get into very specific details about how you can repair the fractured road of your life's journey to prosperity, to success, to giving, to love. I mean, people are walking around miserable. They're smiling, but they're miserable. They're really, most people really are not very happy. You can have it all. You can do well and do good. You can lift as you rise, and you can live a life that you're proud of, and where you come home and your kids don't call you a schmuck. I think that's the whole ballgame.
Yeah, I think that's great. You've summed up the chapters, but obviously they go much more in depth in the book. What words of advice?
I read my own book twice. When I have good books in my library, I've read The Road Less Traveled a dozen times, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success a dozen times. You know, theologians from 40 years ago read those books a dozen times. If a book is good, you'll want to read it over and over and over again. Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis, is probably one of my favorite books in the world. It was written back in the 40s. Wisdom and knowledge is more you repeat it, the more you, it's like any habit, it becomes a part of your character. When I've read my own book twice, it's not because I'm in love with myself. Most of the stuff I do, it underwhelms me. I bore myself. I was really impressed with the content of what was there and the message. And so I'm learning from myself, and I'm learning from the other 30 leaders who are in this book, from President Clinton to Quincy Jones to the CEO of ING, and the list goes on and on and on of heroes and sheroes who are in this book who give by getting.
Yeah. I think it's definitely one of those books, yeah, you want to keep on your bookshelf because it can have different meaning to you at different times in your life.
Yeah.
If you're going through something, you can pick it up and it'll hit home in a different way that time when you pick it up.
The thing that shocked me the most is the people who, even before the book came out, people who got advanced copies, they started reading it and they didn't put it down. They called it a page turner. You just read it in one shot. There's nothing that gives me a greater feeling of accomplishment that, yeah, you know, we really hit it. We really were able to paint a story and walk people through it. I keep saying that we've lost our storyline. Everything has a storyline, and this book has a great storyline.
And it's not just about love, leadership. It's also your story. You know, it goes into a lot of your past experiences and the founding of Operation Hope. And so it's almost like a autobiography as well as a message about loving and leading. And
it's a four-part message. One, it says that there's no shame. There's nothing wrong in failing. Because failing, when you fall forward. And rainbows after storms, that's actually the thing that makes you who you are. It gives your life character. Perfection's boring. It is becoming perfect in your imperfection. And so it's a book about the value of failure and redefining failure as success, and then leveraging that to fulfill your dreams in your life. Number two, it's a how-to book. We've already talked about that. Number three, it's what I call a Twitter biography on Operation Hope in real time, because Operation Hope is 17 years old, so we're too young for a biography in the sense of looking back 50 years. But it's sort of a Twitter biography of where are we today and where are we going and how are you going to get there. And then it's a Twitter autobiography on me. So there are four intertwined, powerful messages written in a way like we're talking right now that's practical, that doesn't use 20 words when two will do, that doesn't diminish the sophistication of the message by talking down to you, but doesn't get so high-minded that you forget that it's not about being a PhD, but a PhD too. It meets people where they are, it talks in plain English, and it lifts you from wherever you are to help you get to wherever you're going. And it absolutely delivers a message that you can win and live your life and your dreams through love. That is really, at the end of the book, you come away and go, everybody's been selling us the wrong deal. The reason that America and the world is having all these problems is we have an entire generation of leaders who led by fear.
Right.
Period. Full stop.
Well, I would love to end with a final question for our future leaders, and that is, if you could give some words of advice, wisdom, or encouragement for future leaders, what would you say to them?
I would say that eagles don't fly in packs, that you'll never see a flock of eagles. You know, if everybody's going left, that's a sure sign that you may want to go right. That in a world obsessed with one question, what do I get? That you should be naturally asking yourself, wow, then if everybody's asking, what do I get? I should be trying to ask, what do I give? You've got to understand there's 6 billion people in the world and there's nobody just like you. You are an individual. You are unique. You are God's child. You're made special. There's no one just like you. Even if you learn to dance like the best performer on the face of the earth, you'll only be a copy. So be an original. Be that eagle. Understand that leadership's not a popularity contest. And you don't need a majority to change the world and to have a tipping point. One person can change the world. Martin Luther King Jr. only had 30% of the black community behind him. And when he won the Nobel Peace Prize, it was called Martin Luther King, Martin Luther Coon, and a bunch of other choice names. But look at him now, an icon around the world. Nelson Mandela was threatened by the ANC, his own party, for negotiating with de Klerk, who they considered to be the devil. But he had a vision that was larger and more important himself, and look at him now, an icon around the world. And you can go on and on and on. Leadership is not a popularity contest. It's about having virtues and values, having a vision that's larger and more important than yourself, by learning to lead through service and giving. And I guess I'll end with the story of Andrew Young, which is in the book. Andrew Young makes, you know, he doesn't mind saying, you know, he made $1 million a year for a long time, and he gave away $600,000 of it, and I thought he was crazy every year. He told me one story once where he was making $50,000 a year as a mayor of Atlanta, and he was an honest mayor, so it was only $50,000 a year. And his church came to him and said, we want you to lead the giving campaign. Okay, fine, I'll do it. What do you want me to do? Lend your name. And by the way, the chairman needs to put up the first grant for $50,000. And he went to his wife, and he said, we can't afford to do this. The wife said, you can't afford not to do it. You know, what would it be without the church? Blah, blah, blah. Go, the Lord will make a way. Andrew Young said, he better. Fast forward, he goes to the airport. He's in the airport. Guy walks up to him and says, you're Andrew Young. You're my hero. Will you write a book for me? Andrew Young says, sure. Contract shows up in his desk 2 weeks later. Agent calls him and says, look, the book deal sounds fine. Evidently, you said yes to this guy. Sign it. And by the way, there's an advance check in there for $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, what's the message? Ambassador Young said, I never would have got that $50,000 if I hadn't first committed to give and to open myself up to possibilities. I said, but it was a wash. He says, no, it wasn't. I got that $50,000. I gave it to the church. But I then was served on the board of that publisher for 10 years, making $75,000 a year in board fees. My book made $500,000, and then I wrote another book. So he made $1.5 million off of that relationship over time because he wasn't focused on this short-term, greed-based, me-based, what-do-I-get-based deal, this laziness, fear-based deal of what do I get. Lead by what you have to give. Be a visionary leader who serves the world, and the world will serve you.
That's excellent advice. Thank you very much. Well, I want to thank you for your time. Unless you have anything else you'd like to add, I'll let you go. But thank you so
hopefully
much.
Hopefully some of that was useful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was great stuff, and only better stuff in the book. I encourage all the listeners to go out there and buy it. I've been talking with John Hope Bryant, author of the recently published Josie Bass title, Love Leadership, The New Way to Lead in a Fear-Based World. For more information on this or other Josie Bass titles, go to josiebass.com.
To find out more about this title and all Josie Bass publications, please visit www.josiebass.com. That's JOSSEYBASS.com.